Hey, do you remember Masters of the Universe? Hello, and welcome to Hey, Do You Remember? A show where we reminisce about a movie or TV series we grew up with, then take off the rose-tinted glasses to see how it holds up today. I'm Chris.
I'm Donna.
And I'm Carlos.
And today we're revisiting Masters of the Universe. Skeletor and his army have taken control of Castle Grayskull and imprisoned the Sorceress. Soon, a portal known as the Great Eye of the Galaxy will open in the throne room, and Skeletor plans to harness its power in order to become the master of the universe. I'm going to be honest, I've seen this movie several times, and I'm still not sure what I just said is accurate. Nevertheless, there's one thing standing in Skeletor's way, a resistance force led by the mighty He-Man. And just when you think you're about to settle in for a feature-length sci-fi fantasy adventure set amidst the war-torn ruins of Eternia, the filmmakers step in to remind you, that shit's totes expensive, y'all. So we're going to set 90% of this hunk of shit on boring old Earth. How's that sound? Unlike the first live-action Ninja Turtles movie, Masters of the Universe was not released at the height of the property's popularity. In 1987, sales of Mattel's He-Man toys were dwindling. Interest had peaked 2 years prior, and the film was intended to help get them flying off the shelves again. Canon Films, the studio behind the picture, were in a similarly desperate spot, and this movie was part of a grand plan to save themselves from bankruptcy. At the time, they also held the rights to Spider-Man, and they believed that the profits from this film would not only provide them with enough dough to make a He-Man sequel, but to also get Spidey's first feature film into production as well. With two successful franchises set up, Canon's financial future would have been secure. That didn't happen. Mm-hmm. Masters of the Universe was a critical and commercial disappointment. Canon Films ultimately filed for bankruptcy, and the original line of He-Man toys ended that year. Like other famous brands from this era, He-Man endures. There have been subsequent toys, cartoons, video games, and comics, but none as popular or as endearing as the original line and the accompanying Filmation cartoon series that ran from 1983 to 1985. Donna, I know you've never seen this movie before, but how familiar were you with He-Man in general, and what were your impressions of it?
Well, I knew about He-Man.
He-Man.
I had nothing against him. Plenty of muscles, not a lot of clothes. And even as a child, it is what it is. It's appealing in its own way. I was a big fan of She-Ra.
Sure, the Princess of Power. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I loved her. I had a little She-Ra action figure, and she had a big sword, and I knew that she was somehow related to He-Man. I just found out. that they were twins. She was his twin sister.
Yeah.
Though they never hung out, I feel like.
She kind of had her own thing going on, her own mythology, her own bad guy.
She was the Xena to his Hercules.
Yeah, sort of, yeah.
I don't think I found out, I don't know if I realized the brother and sister thing. Maybe I knew it at the time and then forgot, but I was like, oh, she was He-Man's girlfriend, but that'd be seven shades of wrong.
Well, one shade of really right.
So did you watch the cartoon at all? The
He-Man cartoon? I did watch the He-Man cartoon from time to time, and always found myself wishing that it was She-Ra.
Mm.
I just sort of felt like that was a very clear, laid out, if you're a girl, you're supposed to watch She-Ra, and if you're a boy, you're supposed to watch He-Man. And so I didn't, I would watch it sometimes. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's playing Skeletor.
Mm.
I wonder if she was going to be in this one. And she usually wasn't. So I have very limited exposure to.
Do you remember when the movie came out?
No.
So it just didn't even.
I did not even know this was a thing until y'all suggested it.
Seriously?
I would have gone my whole life.
Not knowing there was a He-Man movie.
Yeah,
a live action He-Man movie.
Yeah, I never would have known. I thought it was just the cartoon and the action figures.
Wow.
And so boy, you're saying that you're saying that we saved your life.
You really, you opened a whole new dimension. Guys.
With our cosmic key. Carlos, what about you?
Okay, so He-Man and G.I. Joe, and there was probably one...
Transformers, probably.
Transformers and Thundercats.
Oh,
okay. I was familiar with all of them. I didn't care for any of them. Oh. I had all the toys for all of them, if that makes any sense.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I had a Skeletor toy, and I definitely had a He-Man toy, but it didn't make it. It fell apart or something. Mm. I had a Skeletor toy, and I had a giant green tiger, which I also believe
Battle was... Battle Cat, yeah.
Sure, why not?
Cringer when he's with Prince Adam, and then he turns into Battle Cat when Prince Adam turns into He-Man. Hey!
Well...
The blank stares I just got, okay.
So, I mean, I know, obviously, that He-Man is a thing, and that he exists, and that Skeletor is a thing. I get the general mythology, but...
Do you? Because I fucking don't. Even after all these, I still don't.
I said general. I know there are swords involved, and sure. I thought if you combine the swords or something, you've got the powers.
Well, that's in the movie, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, anyways, I do remember though watching this movie, and I haven't seen this movie since, so it probably, I would have to say around 88. I was probably about 5 when I saw this movie. And it's crazy, because watching this movie, I thought that there had to be giant parts that I was forgetting. But nope, I remember the whole thing. I remember the whole movie.
That first act on Earth, that's the whole movie.
I was like, no, there had to be something that explained, no, nothing at all. But yeah, I was not into, He-Man. I was definitely a Ninja Turtles kid, a Nintendo kid, and like a Ghostbusters kid.
Yeah.
So this was, yeah, the fact that this might be an abomination of human endeavor does not really affect me. In much of the same way, Michael Bay's Transformers, it doesn't hurt me at all that they are garbage.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I must have been a huge fan of He-Man because I had tons of toys, not just the obligatory like He-Man Skeletor. Like I had a lot of these toys. There was a picture of me hanging up at when we used to work together on my locker. There was a picture of me when I'm 4 or 5 years old in a He-Man Halloween costume.
Yeah, okay.
So I liked him enough to dress up as him on Halloween. And so I guess I was, but it just didn't resonate with me the same way that like other things from, you know, that era of my childhood have, like Ninja Turtles, Batman, Ghostbusters. I didn't remember much about the mythology of the show. I even in this movie, I thought a lot of the exposition was just total nonsense. It made me feel really stupid that I couldn't follow a lot of what was going on when it first started. And so I was doing the math, and I was really little, like because I saw this in the theater, and I was 5 years old. So this had to be one of the first movies I saw in a theater, I think. So I'm guessing what happened that was like, stuff like Ninja Turtles and Batman was still around as I grew up. He-Man wasn't. He-Man just went away. Yeah. The show went off the air. It wasn't a thing anymore. So, I remember that I had a real temper tantrum when one of my friends had a birthday party and my mom showed me like, okay, so here's what you're getting him. And it was Thunder Punch He-Man. Thunder Punch He-Man, prior to this, my favorite He-Man toy was Battle Damage He-Man, where you hit the chest once, and it flips, and he's got a little scrape.
I had that He-Man.
And then considerably more and more damaged. And I had a Skeletor one, too, so they could just thwack each other, and, like, you see the damage.
Whoa.
This was, like, a real revelation when you're
seriously
a little kid. So that, and then, but then here comes Thunder Punch He-Man, and look the fuck out, Battle Damage He-Man, because Thunder Punch He-Man he had a red outfit. And he had this like red looking backpack type thing, and you're thinking, what's the backpack for? What's he got in there? It was caps. Like, you know, when we were kids, a lot of toys had caps. So when he would punch somebody, pow.
That's awesome.
Whoa.
So I saw this and I was like,
I definitely had that toy.
Right?
That's
okay.
Crazy.
So,
I was like, wait, no, yes, I did.
Thunder Punch He-Man. And I was so jealous that I was like, well, why? But I don't have this one. Like, we're going to give it to this kid. I don't have this toy. And I threw a temper tantrum about it. And my mom said, okay, look, rather than cave in, and because I said, just tell him I'm sick and then I can keep the toy. And like, she's like, no, here's what we're going to do. You're going to go to this birthday party. You're going to give him this toy. You're going to be on your best behavior. And if you can get through that, maybe you get your own Thunder Punch He-Man. So I had to begrudgingly give this thing to fucking whatever this kid's name was. And then eventually I did. I got my own Thunder Punch He-Man. Thanks, Mom. let me see. Oh, and I also, the other thing I remember about my He-Man toys is when I got a little bit older and I had no use for He-Man anymore, I took his armor off because it was like the snap-on stuff. And I took my green crayon and just colored him green and turned him into the Incredible Hulk because the Incredible Hulk toys weren't big enough. They were like the same size as Captain America and everybody. So He-Man became the Incredible Hulk. But anyway, so this first live action movie, the first time I was aware of it was a Pizza Hut commercial where it was like a tie-in and they're showing footage. And I was like, what in the world is this? Dad, you've been holding out on me. Like, this is the real thing. What are we doing? So he took me to the theater, like the next day or that weekend or whatever to see it. And, I remember when it started being really into it, just the idea of like a live action Skeletor He-Man, that was enough to kind of win me over. And then I remember being really disappointed by the Earth stuff. Like they get to Earth and I kind of spend the whole rest of the movie like, well, they're going to be back in Eternia any minute now. This is a temporary setback. Whole fucking thing is on Earth. And so I was disappointed by that and the lack of recognizable characters. Because on the good guy side, you've got He-Man, Man-at-Arms, Teela, and the Sorceress, I guess, is in there. And then on the villain side, Skeletor, Evil-Lyn, and Beast-Man are the only ones that were actually action figures in the cartoon. Everyone else, they made up for the movie. And I was like, what is this? And like, and I remember complaining to my dad when we got out of the theater about it. And he was like, you know, oh, they threw all that in there because they just wanted to sell more toys. And that seems cynical enough to be true, but it actually turns out that's not really the case. That's not why they did that. But we're going to get into that in just a second here. And the other thing I was thinking was like, it was when we did Hook, I remember saying, I think this is the first movie that disappointed me. But I must have just forgotten all about Masters of the Universe because I was so young. But like, this was the first, this had to have been like not only one of the first movies I saw in a theater, but you know, the first time I went into something and left disappointed. And also when we talked about Ninja Turtles, talking about how that was one of the things we maybe went into with, for the first time with preconceived notions. Again, no, Masters of the Universe. I just totally forgot. I had a whole list of things I expected out of this movie too. Because as a kid, so I don't know if you remember this, but the toys came with mini comics that had their own version of, they weren't like the cartoon. Sure. They had a different explanation for who He-Man was and all this. But in my mind as a kid, you're just like, no, He-Man is a cartoon. These are the toys from the characters in the cartoon. And so when you say live action Masters of the Universe, I think that's what I'm signing up for. I'm not aware that this is an adaptation more of the toy line and less the cartoon.
Right. Yeah.
How would any of us know that? So, we were just set up to be disappointed. So my friend Joe that's really into He-Man, I remember trying to watch this with him maybe 10 years ago. Like, we started reminiscing about it, and we're like, yeah, let's throw it in. And we were just laughing the whole time and talking about, like, well, like we did with Mario Brothers. Like, well, how would you do this correctly? Can you make a good He-Man movie? Like, is that even possible? And I also remember that time thinking, this is a giant ripoff of Star Wars, and how did I not realize this before? Yeah. The more I read up on the movie in preparation for this, it turns out some of that's a little unfair. There's explanations for why there's so much crossover with that sort of thing. But yeah, so I did not like this very much the first time I saw it. I've enjoyed it less and less with each subsequent viewing. So things were not looking good for Masters of the Universe when we decided to watch it for this episode. But like Mario Brothers, I thought like the story of how this film came to be is kind of an interesting conversation, like the obstacles they faced during the production. I think there's conversations to be had here about like, you know, where they zigged when they should have zagged. If a live action He-Man movie can even work, and to give credit where it's due, because this is not a total wash. This isn't Mario Brothers. It's not just like, the aim was a little off, but you can tell their hearts are in the right place. I don't know. I mean, there are some cool things and neat ideas sort of peppered in throughout this thing. And with that said, we just looked at it with fresh eyes. So let's see how Masters of the Universe holds up. Okay, Okay, so the opening narration, don't they usually do this to help clarify the plot? Because this thing starts and I'm like,
Castle Grayskull is the center of the universe.
And it's such abstract ideas about like good and evil and what the where this power comes from and what it's used for. I'm sure it makes sense to people that know this stuff really well, because there is a contingent of like, I mean, there are hardcore Masters of the Universe Absolutely. Fans even to this day.
Yeah.
And a podcast like ours is going to drive them crazy because we're going to get like everything wrong, I'll bet. But
they probably hate the movie, so it's okay.
When they do the opening shot of Castle Grayskull, is that not from the cartoon? Is that the same?
No, it's different. It's a matte painting, so it looks
similar. But I was like, oh, I recognize that. That's Castle Grayskull.
I mean, they definitely, exactly, yeah, it's there.
You Scooby Doo when you
just turned into. No, it's like they did their own take on Castle Grayskull, and then like this was probably going to come up later, but Snake Mountain was where Skeletor's lair was. Snake Mountain is name checked in the movie, but you never see it. For cost reasons, they couldn't do it.
There was another place that
but
he
they
lived.
Had they had planned
just
to
right outside Castle Grayskull.
Well, they dumped so much money into that dang throne room that anytime you're on Eternia, you're basically in the throne room,
or you're in the vast desert of
Northern California.
Yeah, it's like New Mexico or wherever.
But, well, okay, and so speaking of these opening credits and everything, the music is sort of, that's a real issue for a lot of people. Like, the music takes a lot of shit for being derivative of Superman and Star Wars.
Oh, was it? I hadn't noticed when I was humming the Superman theme the whole time. Bum ba da bum ba ba da da da. Like, that's what it wants to do.
Yeah.
But it just goes bum ba da bum, bum ba da bum. Instead of. It's like repeat it.
It's like Vanilla Ice explaining why Ice Baby is not
exactly
under pressure.
Right.
Well, I didn't realize until this time that the score was written by Bill Conti, who did the music for the Rocky movies.
Oh, Jesus.
I mean. But yeah, there's no getting around it. They were either through his own free will or from some studio mandate. He was definitely emulating.
I didn't even think to look. I just figured it was a guy who went by Juan Gilliams. I just figured.
What?
Yeah. It's like, I make music just like John Williams. I'm Juan Gilliams.
It's like, well, he's ripping off John Williams and Jerry Goldsmith. Just like, yeah. Jerry Williams. Score by Jerry. Yeah. So then we see the throne room, the throne room of Castle Grayskull, and Skeletor's troops are there, and he comes.
They're all Darth Vader, right?
Black Stormtroopers.
I am not gonna fuck with that guy. That's what I wrote. Don't fuck with this guy. He's got an army of Darth Vaders. I wrote that.
Yeah. Well, so the one is hard enough, but if you have like 200. Yeah.
Now this is another common complaint of the movie is that they're stormtroopers. You ripped off stormtroopers.
They're literally exactly stormtroopers.
Here's what happened. So Mattel had a crazy list of demands about what you could and could not do with these characters. And one of the big ones was, well, He-Man can't kill anybody.
Sure.
And the director was like, well, I have to make an action movie. So, so what's he doing? and he's got to use his sword. What's going to happen here? And so the compromise was sort of like that Ninja Turtles cartoon. Yeah. If they're ambiguously maybe robots, maybe we don't know. Are they, who's to say? Are they humans in these costumes? Are they just robots? Well, he can hack and slash and shoot all he pleases, and there's no gore. Somehow that was okay. So that's why the director says it was not a Stormtroopers thing. It wasn't a Star Wars thing. It was just, He-Man's gotta knock the shit out of some dudes, and this is the only way we could get around it. So that's why they're there. But
they are Stormtroopers. They're black Stormtroopers.
I mean, there's no way around it. They look
exactly. I mean, they could have designed anything, and they went with Stormtroopers in black.
Yeah, and then especially, I don't want to jump all the way to the end right now, but like, so much of the ending winds up being Return of the Jedi with like the Emperor and, mm-hmm. and all that. So it's impossible not to notice the similarities here. But the thing about the throne room is they're all lined up, and Skeletor comes marching in, and before you get your first good look at Skeletor, he's got that massive staff of his like walking, you think it's like maybe some sort of walking stick. And so as he goes, he's walking very ominously slamming this stick down, just boom, boom. And that's what you hear. It's a pretty effective introduction of him. Mm-hmm. But like he's,
He, like, found that on the way in. He's like, oh, this is cool. I'm just going to walk with this thing. What does that sound like on gold floors?
Ooh, it echoes.
That's pretty loud.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Hey. I like it.
Hey, stormtroopers, check this shit out.
He's checking, you know, because he's going to take over Castle Grayskull.
Right.
He's checking for the studs in the floor.
Oh, sure.
So he knows where to...
Because you're going to want to make modifications. You're gonna, sure, you know, yeah.
Where do you drill for cable? Mm-hmm.
True.
He needs to know.
Yeah. That's
so, true. Boom. I'm not going to bang on this table.
Not
I'll break
a moment
it.
Wasted.
Sorry, yeah.
Yeah, he just knows. Mm-hmm. It'd be kind of awesome if he walked in and he's like, and I'm going to put curtains here. That would be awesome.
So the sorceress is there. She's been in prison. All I really remember about the sorceress is that she's the one who gave He-Man his powers in the cartoon. And I think in the action figure thing too. The Skeletor is in prison. The sorceress, he's taken over Castle Grayskull. He-Man is leading the resistance. Whoever controls Grayskull controls everything because, fart, queef, poop, who cares? So the makeup job on Skeletor, it's not as cool as I remember. I like most of it. I think what's missing is that, first of all, watching this on VHS was probably okay, but like higher resolution, you can see that there's no, it's just like the holes where like his skull, the nose holes.
Yeah. It's just
cloth. Mesh.
Yeah.
And, but for me, the thing they needed to do was he's got human eyes. If you can't, I understand you probably can't black him out completely, but, you know, give him some contact lenses or something. Like, it just, the human eyes, I think, are the part that makes it look a little cheap.
I think he just looked really old. Like, to me, like, a lot of what was supposed to come off as, like, bone.
Yeah.
Bone-like appearance, because it's supposed to be a skull head. Just look like he was 900 years old.
Like he chose the wrong chalice at the end.
Exactly.
Of the last
exactly
crusade.
Right. Exactly right. That's what it looked like to me. And then the eyes, because they're human and they're so sunken into this mask, he always just looks sad to me.
Oh, poor Skeletor.
You could just tell that he was putting up a wall. And like He-Man said, it was always about him, I think.
That's a whole other layer to this movie.
Lord, let me tell you what. But I thought Skeletor's face was pretty good.
I think Frank Langella's performance goes a long way in selling Skeletor. Like, Skeletor's the most
wonderful.
Entertaining part of the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, he's fucking, yeah.
Really incredible.
His voice, I would... How
the boyfriend. I'm joking.
I knew you were because you were laughing before you even finished saying that sentence.
Oh man, if we weren't all in the same room, I would have sold that for like another second.
I mean, the voice of Skeletor, I'm really impressed by. It sounds nothing like Frank Langella. I think he's great in it, and I think the makeup, consider the whole. I mean, a lot of what's in the movie, honestly, the production design wise, considering the budget they had, which was. When all was said and done, I think around $20 million, which is no small chunk of change in 1987, but for your big epic He-Man movie, I think they started somewhere around like between 13 and 17 million. I don't remember, but not a lot. Mm. So given the constraints, I do think, you know.
That's pretty cool. Like if you put that on right now and came to my house and were like, trick or treat, I'd be like, yeah.
Well, okay.
You know.
So it stands
that
test.
Someone was trick or treating in mid January.
That's the bigger issue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely a moment like at the end, like near the end of the film, though, where there's just like a really long close up of Skeletor, and you're just all I can see is the nose, and I'm just like,
yeah,
oh,
it kind of ruins. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like now they have, you know, you look at the Harry Potter stuff and how they can just, yeah,
well,
just get that shit right out of it. Well, I'm just saying, like, wild. I mean, if they do ever wind up making a modern He-Man movie, which they've been talking about for years, that
I would never sleep.
I'm sure Skeletor would look crazy
impressive
now. Yeah.
Amazing. This was just the right amount of scary for me. I was terrified, but I could still go to sleep. No.
Mm.
If it had looked realer.
Realer.
Just have been. Ooh.
You live in a big city.
There are much scarier things.
Much scarier things happening.
Skeletor's gonna get me!
So Skeletor broadcasts this hologram of himself all across Eternia.
Yeah. man.
Announcing that, you know, the war is all but won. And
I love this hologram because it's a hologram.
Sure.
But, and again, I'm sure this is like the budget or whatever, but sort of around the second or third time this happened in the movie, he's like, I will speak to the people of Eternia. And it shows this one big empty desert with five Darth Vader stormtroopers. And that's the only
he's preaching to the choir.
There's just five dudes who are like, yeah.
They're like, bro, there's no one here, man. What are we taking over?
I mean, this is one of the things I kind of liked about the opening moments is that, because, yeah, so you get this and you see He-Man watching this message, but his back's to us. We don't get a good look at He-Man yet. And I remember as a kid seeing this going, oh, they gave him a cape. That's fucking rad. I mean, the cape saves the costume, quite frankly.
The cape is the best cape of any
superhero. I love it. I love the way that it's anchored to the shoulder.
You can see his shoulder muscles.
Well, okay. That's not wrong.
Win. That's a win. I was so excited when I saw that cape.
But doesn't it also, though, by definition, block off the rest of his back muscles?
Yes. But then...
Don't worry. They'll make up
for that. Don't worry. I knew it was going to happen. I was so happy when it did. At any rate, the cape is a nice cutaway because those back muscles are important. You don't want to just cover them all up. So at least you get a little sneak peek in there.
I think the cape is the single greatest contribution they made to the Masters of the Universe mythos with this movie.
Yeah.
I think it's a great addition. I love the cape.
It's
and
good.
But what I was going to say was, so like after this message, one of the next things you see is when the stormtroopers come in to get Gwildor, you're introduced to Man at Arms and Teela, who are fighting these guys off, and then He-Man eventually joins in the fight and everything. What I liked about this, and tying into, you know, Skeletor's hologram, was you really do get the sense that this place, they have fucking ravaged this place. Like, whatever war has taken place here has just, like, eradicated, you know, 70% of what was on this planet. And that this band of survivors, this is like a real 11th hour last ditch sort of like, they're, you know, they, his boots on their throat here. Like he's got them. And I like that. And it lasts for about, you know, 5 minutes and then we're in a completely different movie. But I really liked that setup.
I like that it's not an origin story.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Well,
although some of that might have been because they couldn't afford to shoot an entire film in Eternia, I do like that it's like you're kind of just thrust into it. Like, because I wasn't familiar with the mythos, all that familiar, I was like, who is the sorceress? I thought He-Man was in charge. I had no idea.
Yeah,
but then,
I didn't remember.
Yeah, but then it was like somebody says like in the name of the sorceress, that's a spicy meatball or whatever.
Oh yeah.
It says. Yeah.
I don't know. I have mixed feelings about, because I do kind of like that it's just, you kind of hit the ground running. I do think when all is said and done, when the movie ends, that you do kind of get the sense that you came in late and you missed a bunch of important stuff, or like why any of this really matters. But when they go to get, so when you first meet Man at Arms and Teela, who are both from the cartoon and the action figures, obviously, they walk on, and even the woman is wearing full armor. He-Man, this was a choice.
Bucky,
what are you
naked.
Doing? Is he fucking drunk and he forgot to put the rest of his armor on? Because, like, I don't understand. Like, okay, when you look at something, maybe I'm remembering Conan the Barbarian differently, but, like, because that's the thing about those mini comics that came with the toys. He-Man is depicted as, like, a barbarian, just sort of roaming Eternia.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the most... This does not work in life. I know it works for you for very different reasons. But
girls, just watch it. If some guy in your life is like, this movie is awesome, and you're like, no, it's not. Well, it's not, but watch it.
There's
trust me.
Plenty to hold your interest,
it.
That's for sure. But like, this costume is bananas.
I mean, I might have paid extra money
bananas
for a similar costume for Teela.
I mean, it's only fair.
I would have...
I mean, she's covered, but not, like...
I mean, it's skin tight.
Well...
But everyone else is...
what body.
The stormtroopers...
If He-Man would have been covered skin tight, would you have been as satisfied with the costume?
No, certainly
Thank
not.
You very much, yeah.
So,
no.
But
no.
Yeah, stormtroopers, head-to-toe armor. Man at Arms, Teela, head-to-toe armor. And then here's fucking Johnny Underpants swinging his sword around.
Yay, Johnny Underpants!
What kind of outfit is this for war?
Yeah,
he's so strong.
It doesn't make sense, especially
unless it's like an ego thing of like, fucking, I don't need to wear armor. I don't need to wear anything.
Eagle's balls
out. You're never gonna hit me, fuckers.
Yeah, especially in a world, and this was not established necessarily right away, but in a world where everyone has a gun. He's got no armor on. Like, if everyone was fighting with swords, makes sense.
No, it doesn't, but it's better.
It makes, it makes more sense than...
He at least has a shield in the cartoon.
Yeah, he basically uses the sword as a shield in this one. That's basically what he does.
I also remember being... I found it very jarring that He-Man was using a gun the first time I saw this.
It looked weird, and I didn't remember there being a gun holster in the toys, but...
Well, and after the movie came out, I was like, oh, well, I mean, this is canon now. And so I would wear a cape as when I played He-Man. And in addition to my He-Man sword, I would use, like, one of my Return of the Jedi blasters. And now that was He-Man, because He-Man carries a gun now.
Apparently.
Why not?
Great job, movie. But yeah, so they're the Skeletor's forces are there to get Gwildor, locksmith and inventor. He's a replacement for Orko. I don't remember, if you remember
Orko.
Orko.
How about, real quick. Gwildor, love him, lovable guy. Locksmith. One of his first lines in the movie is, I remember when we didn't need to lock our doors. It's like, you remember when life sucked for you, locksmith? He brings him into his home. I remember when we didn't need to lock our doors. I think those days are coming again. Bro, this is the best time for you, Gwildor. You're a locksmith.
Well, he's an inventor. He's got a lot of shit on the back burner. He's gonna, don't you worry about Gwildor.
The only thing he invented was a key. He's a locksmith. He's just a locksmith and a really good locksmith.
The whole thing is like, oh, why are you so important to Skeletor? And he says it's because of this invention, the cosmic key. And Teela, this cosmic key, which can open up portals to different points in time and space, that's how Skeletor got into Castle Grayskull. It's how his army just appeared and how they were able to overtake, the resistance there, how he was able to...
I hadn't put that together.
With the key, that's how...
That's how they got in, yeah. That's how they snuck up on him. And when Teela realizes that, she goes, oh, you little worm! And He-Man's line is, like, easy, Teela, he didn't know. But this fucking guy, he doesn't even look at her as he says the line. He was looking at Gwildor when he said the previous line. And Teela's over here, and he's just and here's Gwildor, and he's like, and Teela says, you little worm, he's like, easy, Teela, he didn't know. She's over here, dude! Like, turn your head, Dolph Lundgren. I know this is early in your career, but...
That's when Gwildor's like, are you gonna eat me now?
Well, so, Dolph Lundgren, he's gonna... His wooden acting and lack of charisma might come up a few times here, but the thing about... that I didn't realize was... The director intended to dub him over, like just have someone else come in and redo all of his lines, because like he wasn't totally fluent in English yet when he made this, and but then Dolph Lundgren said you gotta at least let me attempt, and if I don't do it right on set, you gotta give me first dibs on the ADRing, and it is for better or worse.
So that was the best I could get.
Mm-hmm. It's easy, Teela. He didn't know. He's got some other doozies coming up too.
I like when his accent comes in and out. Like it'll be really strong, like very, very strong at the beginning of a sentence, and then at the end, it totally sounds like American English.
Where's he from?
Oh my god!
I wonder if he's German.
No, he's Swedish.
That's right. That's right.
I wonder. I'm a little Swedish, though. So I wonder. He's just.
Doing it for you? Right. Is that what you're saying? He's your cousin, Donna.
We're related. Oh, no.
Oh, no. Skeletor's men are about, they're going to break into Gwildor's place here, and he says, it's okay, I've got a hidden passageway that leads right to the throne room of Castle Grayskull.
He's a locksmith.
The next thing you know, they're
they didn't
in the
have
throne
time
room.
To shoot the scenes in between.
They don't have sets. So this all just happened very fast. I'm assuming it is explained. You say, oh, right through here, we'll
they
go
just,
straight
no,
to.
No, they just use the key.
Didn't he have a hidden door? And he says, in this passageway, it'll take us right to Castle Grayskull?
No, it's this passageway that he plays on his...
That's how they get out of the throne room. That's how they escape in about 10 seconds. Too. Do they?
I thought so.
I don't think they do. But I might be wrong.
That's what my brain told me. I don't know.
I watched this film on 9-minute increments on YouTube. It's very possible I missed a detail in between loading times.
Okay. I thought there was a hidden passageway. Donna says there was a portal. Either way, they wind up in the throne room.
Yeah.
So I apologize for whichever one of us got it wrong on behalf of everybody that's screaming.
That's going to tweet at
right
us.
Now, yeah. So they're in the throne room. Skeletor realizes Gwildor has another key. The prototype key, I believe, is the one Gwildor's holding on to. And so he says, you know, kill him, get that away from them, whatever, whatever. Meanwhile, you know, so He-Man and the others, they fend off the Skeletor's forces while Gwildor tries to open a portal. To where? Anywhere! Just get us out of here. 15 minutes into the movie, and that's it for Eternia, folks. Now they're on Earth. And lucky you can breathe, you fucking idiots. Just punch in some random keys and take us anywhere in the galaxy.
Wilder doesn't seem to know how to use the key.
For the guy that invented it,
he invented it, but he's just like, I don't know, I'm not a song maker. Like, what?
Then why would you program it?
How did you invent this? I can't just create a rocket ship. Because I'm not a rocket scientist. I don't get it.
Oh, so they, lucky for them, these chuckleheads wind up on a planet that has, you know, the same physics, same atmosphere, same everything.
Same species.
An alternate ending that explains that the first people on Eternia were from Earth.
Oh.
Like, they have leftover stuff from, like, NASA and an American flag and all that. So,
So they
I have to say, at this point, because in the exchange in the throne room that we were just in, the sorceress says something like, you still have a moonrise until it's time to go. And I didn't really understand, you know, the words aren't that clear. Mm. And so the whole time I thought she said, you still have Uncle Moonrise.
From wave 4 of the action figures, Uncle Moonrise.
I was like, when is he showing up? Is there an Uncle Moonrise?
It's just a hippie. Hey, kids!
Chris Christopherson stumbles into the film.
Boy, are you groovy, kid!
No. Oh, gosh.
I thought it was the Man at Arms for a long time.
Why does she keep calling Uncle Moonrise father?
It's weird.
Uncle Moonrise.
Didn't seem to fit, but that's what I thought.
Oh, shit. Well, I mean, it's not like a lot of these names are... That's a little too creative. You get, like, fucking Him Guy. I mean,
Beastman.
Beastman.
Him Guy.
Might as well.
Yeah.
Guy Dude. It's so, I mean, you can't come up with a less imaginative name than He-Man.
It's so funny. My wife was asking me the other day, why isn't it She-Woman? Why is it She-Ra? I was like, actually, that's a better name than He-Man. He-Man kind of sucks.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is the point in the movie when I was a kid where I realized, oh, shit. So, no Battle Cat, no Prince Adam.
Oh, God, no.
You know, none of that. And the thing is like, so the director has defended that by saying, look, all that stuff could still exist. It's just not, because this is a very immediate story. It just doesn't exist in this story. But that's not really the case, because as I mentioned earlier, the producer wanted the rights to the toy line, not to the cartoon. And when you compare that, when you think about something like Ninja Turtles, the live-action Ninja Turtles movie, and how we were talking about how it's this great blend of the tone and the plot of the comics, but it brings in the elements of the cartoon, recognizing this is what made the Turtles popular. Like, there is a way to blend these elements.
Yep.
This movie kind of does... It takes the wrong elements from each... thing, it kind of does it the backwards version of that, where it's like it gets the setting wrong. I mean, the tone is fine, but like, and yeah, the characters that you would expect to see are not here, and the things you are preparing for, like even something as simple as watching Prince Adam turn into He-Man, it's not in the movie, and that's probably the most iconic image from the cartoon. So it's
everything on Earth was on a set, right?
I think a lot of it was shot in California.
Yes.
But, like, no, but I mean, no, like, in a neighborhood in California.
Because it seems like the entire Earth section of this film is shot in about a 1.5 block radius.
Which I think is just budget-wise, like, because I think it was probably cheaper for them to shoot on location in that town than it was to shoot in a to build sets in a studio.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
And I think I remember reading something that said a lot of the buildings you see in those, like, downtown scenes or whatever, an earthquake came through and kind of ravaged that area, and most of that stuff doesn't even exist anymore.
So it looks like Eternia now.
So now they could shoot there, and it'd be great.
It'd be great.
Timing.
So they land on Earth. I've been in several forests. I have goddamn never run into a wild cow.
Yeah. What on earth was that? It's a big life form. I'm like, oh, they got a bear. They got them a bear
or a deer if you're in the woods. Something you expect. And then there's a. I'm as surprised as they are, quite frankly. That, like, this thing does look awfully out of place.
Oh. Mm.
I mean, like, why? And they're so close to the fast food joint. Are we to believe?
Them burgers is fresh.
They've cut out the middleman, and they've got a. Yeah.
Yeah. They would right be the best there. Burgers.
Oh. They would be.
Those burgers would be the best.
Free range cows murdered to order.
Well, if you put it like that.
That didn't fit on the sign, which is why they went with
Burger King. That's why they went with In-N-Out Burger.
But yeah, so the fast food joint, that's where Courtney Cox works. Courtney Cox plays Julie. This is her last day there. I realized watching this, young Courtney Cox has the same exact face as Jared Leto. It's the same face.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So what the hell's going on with Courtney Cox? Her boyfriend, Kevin, picks her up. And, like, as they're having their whole exchange about this being their last date because she's going somewhere, whatever. I was so preoccupied with the song playing in his van. Did you guys notice this? These are the lyrics. I wrote it. These are the lyrics to the song. It just keeps repeating this over and over again to, like, an 80s synth beat. Am I living in a box? Am I living in a cardboard box?
What a random song.
I didn't know
I love
that.
It.
No. So, let's...
There you go.
We get the whole scene where the Eternians immediately...
Wait, are you going to say her parents are dead? That's why.
Oh, sure. Leaving. Well, I was going to wait till they got to the cemetery, because that's where you find out. But yeah, who gives a fuck?
I mean,
yeah,
it's right there.
No, I think you find out. You find out before they leave the...
Oh, the cemetery is where you find out she thinks it's her fault.
Yeah. There's a whole lot of exposition in the conversation she has with her female coworker, who I won't remember. But it was just like, you can't break up with Kevin.
Yeah.
And then, like, the next, like, two lines about that. And then it's like... Since your parents died. Like, it's like, she knows. Stop reminding her.
I have really... Okay, so I think Courtney Cox, and the guy that plays Kevin actually went on to be... Michelle would know this. Went on to play Tom Paris in Star Trek Voyager.
Wow.
He's a very, very popular character on that show. They're fine. I think they're good actors. I don't mind the characters. I mind that they take center stage in a movie called Masters of the Universe, and it's all about their puppy love. And
if they had been the couple from, like, Once Bitten, totally fine. Totally fine with that.
Yeah.
It's like, why is this the story that we're telling? It's a weird... The whole movie is that episode of Star Trek where Kirk and Spock are in, like, the 20s. Like, where they just, like, go to a planet that is basically Earth. Like, this whole movie is that. And this is not the most interesting story in He-Man's stories and his adventures.
I mean, if he's going to land on Earth, please not here. I understand it was not a creative decision. It was a logistical thing.
Definitely a budgetary decision, you can tell.
But, okay, so this reminds me a lot of the first Thor movie. They're basically the same movie.
That's fair. Yeah.
And it was for very similar reasons. They wanted to... And, well, yes, there's the cape, sure. Marvel wanted to cut costs a little, and instead of having the whole thing take place in Asgard, we're in New Mexico or wherever they were for most of that movie. A very similar thing, and it was kind of disappointing in that Thor movie too. They're like, oh, this is most of it's going to be here. But I'll get into, you know, towards the end when we're wrapping things up and talking about He-Man and these characters and all this stuff, about why, despite that limited scope, the first Thor movie still functions better as a story.
Yeah.
because its focus is in the right place, and Thor registers as an actual fucking character who experiences something. Mm-hmm. And, like, you realize, like, this is why we're telling this story. Maybe it's not the most epic battle he's ever been in, but here's why this was an important moment for Thor. And this feels like this is what happens on Earth is, like, this minor inconvenience to get back to the real problem on Eternia, which we'll deal with for about 5 minutes at the end of the movie. Mm. But, okay, so, yeah, parents dead, da-da-da-da-da.
Sensitive. You're so sensitive. Parents dead, blah, blah, blah.
Well, her... Bing, bing, bing. I mean, I'm sorry. Courtney Cox, you're great. And he's, you know, whatever. I don't give a fuck about Kevin and Julie. Mm. So they find the cosmic key in the cemetery. How did this thing land so far away from everybody else? Mm. I don't understand how that happened.
Yeah, especially when they...
Hold on to that.
Yeah, they grappling hooked it.
It's in the grappling hook. Mm. Yeah. So anyway, okay, so they find the cosmic key. He thinks it's a synthesizer.
From Japan.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. It has to be Japanese.
Starts playing, starts tinkering with it. And because of that, Evil Lyn tells Skeletor, oh, we've tracked He-Man within one parsecian. That's one of those crazy Eternia.
It's an actual Star Wars term.
They made the Kessel Run in, you know, under parsecs.
Under 12 parsecs, yeah.
Which was an error, you know this, right? Because it's a measure of distance, not of time, so it doesn't make sense. But anyway.
Cut corners.
Nerd alert.
So now, Skeletor... We're doing a podcast about Masters of the Universe. I think that card's on the table already.
I was just really more addressing the look that Donna was giving us.
I'm sorry. Did you say, how did I end up here?
Super great movie. Yeah, no, I mean, I walked. That's how I got here.
Now that they know a general idea where He-Man is, they're going to send in these mercenaries to search for them.
Oh, his words are so gross.
And I remember being very disappointed that Beast Man's the only recognizable one, and he has no lines in this. Like, I think there was an earlier version of the script where he was the one in charge of this band of mercenaries. He was the one barking out orders and stuff. In this one, yeah, I know. But in this, you get Krang. What the hell was his name?
I don't know. Little girl from The Exorcist with a giant afro.
Yeah, that's what it is. Well, he is not from the cartoon. Sorod, the reptilian looking guy. For the film, and Blade created for the film.
Blade is horrible.
Blade bothered me a lot.
I thought he was tits when I was a kid. I thought he was awesome. But
the reptilian one had this awesome effect where his neck would expand.
I loved that.
Yeah, but I just kept thinking, like, why are we wasting money on this part? Like, throw that money at something else. Like, there are so many places to, like,
there's a couple instances of this. Yeah, there's a couple things in the movie that it's just like, you blew your budget here.
Do we need, like, a 4,000 square foot throne room for Castle Grayskull?
Well, you're going to set a third of the movie there, so apparently. there's no trap jaw, there's no merman, there's no characters you recognize. You get these guys. And the reason is, it's not that it was about creating new toys, although they did make toys. Toys of like Gwildor and Blade, I believe. It was because, again, the rules Mattel had about what you could and couldn't do with them. And the director was like, I have to tell a story here. So some of these guys have to get attacked. The thing about the reason, like when Skeletor vaporizes one of them in a couple of scenes, couldn't do that with an existing character. So if that's going to happen, it's got to be some dude we make up. Okay, so these mercenaries show up at the high school. I remember, they explain all this later, but at this point in the movie, I was like, okay, Julie's in high school. Where does she live? Who does she live with? Where is she going?
Did her parents just die?
Who is the guardian? And if she's not going to be here for graduation, where is she going? Is she going to do some kung fu shit and just travel the countryside? What is happening with Julie? And then the mercenaries show up and start chasing her. Kevin goes off to get this synthesizer looked at, and so I'll be back and you just wait here.
Makes no sense because he's got a gig that night and he's apparently serious about his music. So he's going to put his gig on hold, do the sound check, which is what he was there for, in order to get this synthesizer appraised by a guy at basically a music pawn shop.
Yeah, so So while he's off doing that, she stays behind because, oh, I'm going to get a last look at the place. And then these mercenaries show up. I remember this part scaring the shit out of me when I was a little kid. Beastman coming after her and everything. Now, there's a part where little girl from The Exorcist yells, take her alive, and because she knows where the key is. Mm. Well, they're shooting at her. They're clawing at her. Blade's like, I got her. Ka-chunk. And that sword down through the table right in front of her. And then, like, one of them, like, throws a knife at her and it barely misses. It's like, he said, take her alive, dude. Like,
I was thinking that, like, well, how is she still going to be alive when you've just thrown two swords through the stage? Oh. Like, what information are you really getting out of her? She's, like, you know, drowning in her own blood. Mm.
So she winds up in some garbage dump, something.
Where is it?
Alley.
That's chained up. That's all you really need. It is kind of like a junkyard.
Yeah, sort of. And then that's where He-Man comes to her rescue.
A loading zone.
Yay, He-Man.
He wraps her in his cape.
It's perp. She runs right into his chest and...
She does.
He's like, what's wrong?
Come with me. I will save you. And then he carries her like a baby.
Wrapped in his cape, yeah.
He's never met her before.
Nope.
She's just like, okay. Sure, why not?
Naked man with the sword and a gun. And then she, you're not as dangerous as these other people chasing me. So he sets her out of the way, and he naked fights the mercenaries. He is, the dude is basically naked. It's Viggo Mortensen in Eastern Promises.
If we had glasses, I would cheers right now.
Okay, so that happens. Donna's on board. Donna loves it. Kevin goes to the music store to get all that business checked out. Who cares?
Hey, Chris, who do you think Donna's going to want to F at the end of this?
I had a real hard time with it in this one. Now I know how she feels with most movies we do. So,
one girl and she's naked the whole time.
Yeah.
So He-Man and Julie go to find Kevin since he has the key. He-Man knows that's what these dudes are looking for. He, meanwhile, comes back to the school to find Julie. They all just miss each other. So as they're dragging the janitor out of the wreckage of the burning school, and he goes, and Kevin recognizes him, and he goes, Carl, what happened? And Carl, as he's loaded into the ambulance, says, you don't never want to know. So I always want to know. I will never not want to know what took place here.
Carl, it's double negative. Carl.
You spend all day in a school, Carl.
I know you're bleeding out, double negative. Confused by your syntax.
And then we get Detective Lubick, I thought it was.
I think it's Lubick.
Lubick. I'm sure, in this movie, I'm sure it's Lubick. He's played by...
Greases the wheel.
Everything's about getting He-Man on his knees. It was always about me. Everything's phallic. Skeletor flies around in a dick and balls. Lubick is played by James Tolkien, who's Skinner in the Back to the Future movies, Principal Skinner. He always plays the same part in these 80s movies. And so now he's on the scene. Him and Kevin get together to go track down this nonsense. The Eternians, they all regroup. Gwildor shows up in a pink convertible that he's had time to outfit into some sort of futuristic contraption, and now it speeds along with Star Trek engines on it.
They've also stolen food, right?
Stolen a car.
Food that they didn't realize was meat.
I guess they're vegetarians on Eternia.
Except for Man in Arms, who's totally...
They have been on Earth for 2 minutes, and he's like...
I'm real hungry.
Yeah, I'm useless on an empty stomach. You're useless, period, Uncle Unicorn. Or Uncle Moonrise.
Uncle Unicorn. Unicorn was a bad guy. Come on.
Yeah, right. So the next thing is important so Skeletor mentions, we cut back to Skeletor, he says he won't kill He-Man because he's not going to turn him into a martyr. This is an interesting idea.
Sort of a good
think
point.
Something's going to happen with that. The mercenaries return, they have failed to bring back He-Man or the key, so that's where he vaporizes one of them.
Who does he vaporize? Which one?
The Sora, the reptilian guy.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so Evil Lyn arrives on Earth with the mercenaries, uses that little scanner to look back on the fight that took place, realizes it was just He-Man, not this army that defeated them. And, so the key's been activated. They're tracing the key signal. That's how they keep finding these guys. The mercenaries arrive at Julie's house. They attack Kevin. They put that truth collar on him, which I thought was kind of cool. They find the article about her dead parents, which Evil Lyn has the foresight to know that, oh, that might come in handy. So He-Man and the team, they get to Julie's. They free Kevin. They realize that, you know, who's been there, who's attacked him. Okay. What, I don't even understand what my notes say at this point. The cop went to the music store, so that's where they go.
The cop takes the key.
Right, yeah. And he says, if it's not stolen, you'll get it back, but I'm gonna go get this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so
but it's stolen now. He just took it.
Right. Okay, so that's where they go. Evil Lyn is also tracking the key signal, so she shows up there too, and that's where you get the big battle scene in the middle of the movie. The weird thing about this is as they're getting ready to battle, like the troops are lining up outside, they're setting up defenses inside the music store. Man-at-Arms has his weapons drawn, he's getting ready. He-Man looks at him, and he says, "How do you feel?" What the fuck? What the fucking fuck is... Why?
I feel good.
And then the battle starts, and...
And they've decided that for the battle, Teela should not be there. She should be in the back room, securing...
until one of the, and the cop even says, "Isn't there? Aren't your friends out there like getting shot at?"
This doesn't make sense.
And so she says, "Yeah, you're right." So she goes and joins the fight. And this is like I had totally forgotten about this part of the movie where she takes out a few guys all at once, turns to the camera, breaks the fourth wall, and says, "Woman at Arms." Oh, no. I said out loud. I was like, oh, no.
All I see is woman in clothes, and I'm not happy.
I liked it. Oh, Woman at Arms. Oh.
Maybe this is the rare action movie that is for women.
It's actually for women. They really.
Maybe that's what this is. It's a teenage love story in the middle.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's got music.
Sure.
It's got...
Am I living in a box?
it's got naked Dolph Lundgren. It's got it's got a strong female character who never gets naked.
No. Yeah, you can respect her. Evelyn also not naked.
Sure.
Sorceress, not naked. They've all got their own things going on.
that
thank God. Thank the sorceress.
That wasn't a tough decision. I don't think.
Keeping your clothes on.
Well, there was a shot when they're all getting into the pink convertible where He-Man's not wearing his cape because Courtney Cox is draped in it, and nobody noticed or gave a fuck about the fact that he had a severe wedgie, and it's just ass cheeks for days as he gets into that car. You didn't notice that?
No, I didn't notice that.
Neither did I. I thought just a real quick glance. I thought maybe I imagined it, and so.
Oh man, what are you? You didn't notice
so,
it
while they're.
Are you living in a box?
Yeah, are you living in a cardboard box? So, Julie, while they're in the back of the music store...
Guys, we gotta cut this single.
Julie looks out the window and sees her mom. And completely ignores the fact that her boyfriend is fighting a cop over a gun. Her boyfriend's gonna get his... face blown off.
Not only does she ignore it, she looks back at it
and
goes,
see, and
meh.
Yeah, runs outside to mom.
High school relationships, whoever knows, really. But that's your mom, and she's been dead, and she's out there.
Okay, fine, but here's where... Okay, now it gets honky-tonky-wonky pants. She goes out there, "Mom, where have you been?" And this is mom's official explanation. Mom says, this is the exact line, "We had to disappear. We're doing very important, very secret work." Oh, cool. "I have no further questions," says idiot Julie. Like, that's like, works for me.
Yep.
Obviously, this is not really her mom. And then she hands over the key. She's like, oh, this is part of our secret work. We're looking for this. Takes the key, turns into Eva Lynn. Julie has that, I feel so bad for Courtney Cox in this moment, where she obviously was told, don't reach for the key. Don't try and get it back. Take two steps back awkwardly, grab your hair, and scream! Oh, how can I miss that dub? And just leave this woman plenty of time to run off with the cosmic key. Oh, so,
so terrible. I mean, you just can't. I think evil guys everywhere. I mean, to be evil, whatever, you're gonna do your own thing. But when you fuck with somebody's dead parents, that is so deep down shitty, shitty, shitty. I just felt so bad for her.
That's a bridge too far for you.
That is too far. If you're like, oh, your parents are dead, but what if they weren't? Like, that's just the worst.
We're talking about all the power in the universe.
If you've been...
Yes.
Okay,
her name is Eva Lynn.
I mean, it's in her damn it's name. Not like, it's not like... Pretty temperamental.
I think it's really just pronounced Evelyn, and she's been going by Eva Lynn since she made her decision.
Yeah.
But for the past 2 hours, you've been seeing alien creatures coming at you, doing things that are not explainable by modern science. And then you see your mother, who is dead in the ground, whose body you buried.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, nope, that's totally happening right now. That's totally legit.
She should have known. She just wanted to believe so badly because she missed her parents so desperately.
She said, I'm willing to sacrifice my boyfriend.
Yeah, he's dead. That's fine. That's good.
For my mom.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. Okay, so Skeletor arrives in his dick and balls. He's flying around in that contraption.
I looked like a clamshell on top of a barrel.
From the front, yeah. Mm-hmm. But when you see like the design of it, you know what is the real problem for me in this episode? Okay, all right, I'll explain the ship and then I'll explain what the problem is. Okay, it's just like the long part. And then he's got the two things on each side, the engines on each side.
I didn't see the engines.
It's the shape of it. Here's the thing. I was going to make a comment on how there's a ton of phallic stuff in this movie. You didn't notice the penis ship. You didn't notice the penis ship. This guy who was staring at Dolph Lundgren's ass noticed the penis ship. I think maybe the ship is not the problem. I think maybe...
Dude, I wasn't ever... He-Man's sword is a giant penis. The restaurant probably serves hot dogs. Although we didn't see them, I bet they're there.
With her haircut, doesn't Courtney Cox kind of look like a penis? He was like, Chris, no. No. Okay, so there. Some of the troops are flying around on those hover disc things. Yeah. He-Man steals one,
breaks through a window, and steals one.
Yeah, and then he's flying around on this thing, and that's how he gets the key back. Flying around on that, uses the grapple hook, and then he's chased by more flying troops. I thought this was a cool idea. Like, obviously, the effects have not aged very well, but like, since most of the action scenes are just like blast, blast, swing, swing, clitter, clatter, whatever, whatever, I thought this one stood out as being kind of cool. Mm. Eventually, Skeletor gets the upper hand here. He's got, I believe he's got Grandpa Lollipop and Tila.
Uncle Moonrise?
Uncle Moonrise and Tila and everybody. They're all like.
It's Woman in Arms.
Woman at
all. he's got them at gunpoint or whatever, and he tells He-Man, here's how it's going to go down. You're going to surrender to me, or everybody dies. Either you come back with me and you're my slave, or everybody dies right here. So He-Man has no choice. He surrenders. Skeletor leaves the others stranded on Earth with no way home. And then, so what they realize, like, Gwildor, all them, everyone stuck on Earth. The only way back is to remember the melody that the key made when you pressed the giant red button. And Kevin remembers this because he's got an ear for melody, songwriter. I actually didn't hate this solution. I actually thought, like,
oh, Go ahead.
For like, yeah. You know, it, whatever you're going to pull out for, like, in order to get back to Eternia, there were worse ways to solve their problem. This made sense because you didn't, it was set up that you didn't realize was set up. It was just.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
maybe. This was one of my favorite problem solutions in the movie.
The way they rig together the.
Oh my God. No, that they, he's trying to remember the melody. And it's this very dramatic moment in the film, and there's music playing that sort of, as an audience member, just seems like, oh, this is just the music that goes along with this, you know, heavy thinking moment of like, oh, we're trying to solve a problem. And that's what movies are like when our listeners know. And and he's like, oh, I wish that music would turn off. I can't remember the melody. And Teela just turns to a speaker in the corner of where they are and shoots it, and it's done.
Yep.
And I was so delighted by that.
What did you call her?
Teela?
It's Woman at Arms.
Tequila?
Teela Tequila?
Woman at Arms.
It's Woman at Arms.
Teela Tequila makes a cameo as a newborn.
Yeah, right.
Well, the thing about her shooting the speaker, that is a great moment. Doesn't it look like, though, like they just stopped the film, unscrewed the thing, removed it, started rolling it? Because it, like, just straight up, like, disappears.
Yeah, she vaporized.
I mean, it's fine. Yeah, it works.
They didn't have squibs.
I was very...
A squib for her? It wasn't going to bleed.
Yeah, they didn't have squibs. It'd be awesome if it did, though.
That's the gore in the movie.
Awesome.
Okay, so, yeah, that's... They're working on that. Meanwhile...
Are we living in a box?
Meanwhile, Skeletor is, he's got He-Man chained up in the throne room, and he's like, you will kneel before me. This is going to happen. What am I missing?
That's my note.
Oh, yes, I knew there'd be a scene where they took off his shoulder covers. All caps, ladies and gentlemen. His shoulder covers.
That's part of it.
You never send a soldier into battle without a torso cover.
He just had those shoulder covers.
He did.
That's
the area he's concerned about. God, don't you hit me with one of those lasers here.
Not on my shoulders.
Yeah.
Not on my big shoulders.
Okay, so yeah, now we get, he is just straight up in his undies and boots in this scene. And Skeletor orders Blade to use that cosmic laser whip on him to, you will kneel, He-Man.
Which he doesn't react to.
No handles that.
No, it hits him.
The timing is like, oh, gosh.
He sexy poses for that whip.
It's because he doesn't.
And because the animation is a little behind, it's like He-Man, like, he's into it. He's like, right there. And then the whip is like, oh, yeah, right there. And he's like, okay, now this side. And the whip is like, okay. It's the 80s.
It's amazing.
I argue that's exactly what they wanted it to look like. That's exactly the moment they were going for.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh. All right, so Skeletor is about to absorb all of the power of the universe, and he does. He turns into Pope Skeletor, and who doesn't look remotely as threatening as regular Skeletor. That's.
I thought he was so scared. I thought he was
really.
So cool.
I hate this look.
You don't like the heads. The headdress.
No, I hate it. I think he looks so much cooler without it.
I think he looks like bad guy from the Thundercats.
Oh, man, yeah, he totally does.
Yeah, because they're like, oh, I had this toy, and it's like, no, that was a Thundercat. That was definitely, like, a bigger toy than I had.
But, yeah, this was another thing. It was like, did we need the costume change for the two-minute battle? Like, nope. This is what you threw the money at? Come
Again,
on.
There were other places to allocate this money.
So the others manage to transport to the throne room. I like that part of the alley comes with them. That's a new feature that the other keys did not.
Yeah, it just takes the entire...
We'll just blame it on the way this one was rigged together.
Prototype.
And this is the scene where Skeletor goes back on everything he said. I'm not going to kill He-Man because I don't want to turn him into a martyr. Except you are. Mm-hmm. You are going to kill He-Man. And like, and the thing about, you're going to be my slave. That's how I won't kill you. I'm going to turn you into my slave. For a couple of seconds. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to kill you. So He-Man grabs the sword... manages to fuck up the only important line He-Man would have in a Masters of the Universe movie.
Oh my word.
Which is, I have the power, and he kind of... First of all, the line is not, I have the power. The line is, by the power of Grayskull, ... I have the power. Mm-hmm. He gets halfway through that line and just bails on it. He holds the sword up and he's like, I have the power. I'm like, Benson, this feels stupid. You can tell he feels stupid.
Oh, he's like, in my country, I'm a physicist.
Okay, so then the final battle begins, and at some point he breaks Skeletor's staff, which is the conduit for all this power, apparently, because then it's just gone. Mm. The new fancy costume evaporates. They reenact the climactic moment of Return of the Jedi. Skeletor's thrown down into this pit apparently dead.
I thought all the power in the universe would be more power than that.
Than a dress and a staff?
Well, I actually like the costume change. I think it's cool. But after that, like he shocks some people. He can't stop He-Man from pulling the sword.
Yeah.
He doesn't have enough power to do that. He keeps telling people to kill other people. It's like, you have all the power in the universe.
All the power.
Kill all of them.
Yeah.
Kill everyone. And then make new people. Because you are the master of the universe.
This scene is also the only scene in the movie where we see He-Man being He-Man and having superhuman strength, which when he knocks down that pillar.
Okay, what's great about this is first he goes with his back. He's like going to push it with his back. And he's just like,
yeah.
Nope, not going to work. He turns around and pushes it with his arms. Like, it's like, it's too heavy for me. And then when he pushes the giant column, it's like 9 feet away from the guys that was supposed to land on.
Anyone.
And they both fall out of the way.
Well, the ripple.
Yeah, right. But there's another column right next to it that would have been the right column to push. There's three columns. He pushes the middle one, and the one on the right would have been like, that's the one you want to get because that's where they're standing.
And then meanwhile, we'll cut to the director. Cut! Damn it, Dolph! I said second from the right.
I think that they were just striking the set. This is just footage of them striking the set.
Down, yeah.
Well, actually, speaking of that, Canon shut down the production 3 days before it was scheduled to end.
Oh.
And so they had shot everything except this last fight scene. They'd gotten the build up to it. They'd gotten the resolution of it. The actual exchanging blows. They had not shot that part. And so
they're just like, screw it.
I don't know. They were out of money. And so the director talked him into like, just give me one day. Da, 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 da. They didn't have enough money. They didn't have enough crew to light the set. And that's why when they start fighting, the power goes out. Like the power you're meant to believe just like, you know, sucks in all the other energy in the room. And it's like a blackout. And then that's why a lot of the time when they're fighting, you just see like a single red light behind Skeletor.
Yeah. It's just like a fill light. It's not a key light. Yeah. Just
very, and a lot of quick shots and da, 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 da. And like the sparks is the weapon.
It all looks like when Splinter tells a background story in Ninja Turtles.
I actually think this is a kind of a neat fix.
It's very effective, yeah.
I like the way it looks. I think it feels very dramatic.
Yeah.
So
working with your limitations.
And the guy that plays Blade not only choreographed, you know, his fight scene with He-Man, he choreographed this scene as well. I think the majority of the sword play in the movie. He is in the Skeletor suit in this scene.
Okay.
Oh.
He's the one fighting Dolph Lundgren.
Mm.
Okay, so yeah, Skeletor goes, bye-bye, peace is restored. He-Man gets some fancy gold-plated shoulder covers.
If you gotta cover shoulders, I guess you still...
I guess it is.
Just a matter of time before he takes them off again.
When Gwildor says, or somebody says to, you know, Julie, like, oh, Gwildor, he's like, hey, are you sure you want to go back then? We can, you know, you want to go back and see this other time or this other place and da 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 da. And that's when I go like, whoa, 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 whoa.
Yeah, you could have.
Am I living in a box? Because I understand traveling between different spaces.
They
go back before Skeletor got into Grayskull.
Yeah.
Wait for him to open that portal.
Yeah,
stabby stab. Boom. You're dead.
No.
Movie over. Gwildor. This is the scene where they all kick the shit out of him and throw him down the pit.
Yeah.
Okay, so then you find out that Julie has been sent back the day that her parents...
Because just as she's, like, traveling through the portal, she, like, yells it out, but you don't know if it got... You don't know if she, like, she was heard.
Right. Yeah. Which, what could he have done at that point?
I didn't...
Oh, make sure you send me... The...
Yeah. I didn't know that she even requested that. I thought he just did it.
Hey, DJ!
wicka, wicka, wicka,
all right! Remix! Let's do this over! the Catalina Weekend Remix. And so she says, don't go to Catalina. Stay here. And so, yeah, she saves her parents, runs out, meets Kevin, and she's like, was it all a dream? And he goes, no, because I have this. And it's like this stone thing that when you look into it, it's a hologram of some naked muscle man pointing his sword at the sky, again butchering the I have the power line. Why would he give... What is... Why does he... Are these like headshots in Eternia? He-Man's just like, here, take this. Oh, look at me.
Yeah. No, that's it.
It's like a mouse.
And Kevin's like, why don't I hold on to this, Julie?
You know, it's not a fair representation of the male form.
Yeah, I just don't
it's not
think.
Realistic.
Yeah, I just don't. You forget this happened. A realistic high school boyfriend would be like, oh, I got this souvenir. Oh, fuck this. Just throw it out the window. No, I don't know. Were we there? Maybe it was a dream.
What are you talking about? You're crazy.
I don't know if you guys stayed for the post-credit scene.
Oh my god, I was so scared.
I didn't.
Of Skeletor popping out of some red water going, I will be back. The hubris of... any movie that announces its sequel and then doesn't get a sequel is hysterical.
Mario Brothers
is one. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I love the idea that someone would say, I will be back. And it's like, no, you're technically back. You're back already. You're already back.
I mean, I'm here.
What are you
hold on, let me try this again. Final thoughts, Masters of the Universe.
Wow. I mean, thank you, guys.
Netflix is never getting this movie back.
It's been sent. I'm ready for something else. But this is, I never would have known that this existed if it was not for this podcast with you fine people who watched this as children. I never would have known it was a thing. And now... the whole world is open up to me, and I hope to someday become a master of my own universe. And
would you
put
say
on a costume change, Pope hat? This is all you need.
I need some shoulder covers, and I'm pretty much set. That was a doozy, man. What a motion picture.
It's so weird. It's such a weird movie. Oh. It's so strange. I feel like this movie would have been awesome if it was campy. In that, like, if it knew what it was doing, if it knew what was happening to it, and it would have been, like, they would have played up the homoeroticism between Skeletor and He-Man, and if they would have, like, you know, recognized that this is a ridiculous story, and for the He-Man mythos, the cartoon never goes to Earth, that I remember. Like, it's a stupid story for a He-Man movie. And if they would have just, I feel like, embraced that rather than kind of like this is what we had. Like, we had this, you know, this money. I feel like it could have been really, really funny. Like, it could have been really great.
Yeah, I mean, I understand why it didn't happen. Like, I'm sure everyone at Mattel would have been like, nope, I'm not doing that.
No, right.
And I also, I think as adults, that would be fun. I think as a kid, I'd be like, why aren't they taking it seriously? And I can only imagine, like, my dad taking me to a movie theater to see this and be like, what the hell are we watching? And like, because I was thinking of that too. I mean, this whole issue of, like, can you make a good live action Masters of the Universe movie, and what does that look like? And I was thinking the same thing. You either go, you embrace the absurdity of it, or I think the other direction is, like, you have to commit to it 100%. And committing to it 100% means not leaving Eternia. It means, because things like He-Man's ridiculous costume and I think if you had, if it's within the context of like, okay, this is another planet, this is another whatever, the stuff that starts to look silly and kind of cheap and weird once you set it on Earth, I think your suspension of disbelief remains. Yes. If you just stay like, here's Eternia and here's where we are and this is how He-Man dresses and this is what's going on. Mm-hmm. I think that's the only other way to really totally buy into this concept. Can you make a sincere, like, that earnest a He-Man movie, though? Because when the concept, it's called He-Man. It's a stupid name. It's a stupid costume.
It's called Masters of the Universe.
Well, the cartoon was He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. Yes. But yeah, I mean, like, I know you could go online right now and there's probably several versions of screenplays that were in contention at several points throughout the last few years. There was one I know called Grayskull, which I thought was a badass name for a He-Man movie. I'd be interested to read something like that to see, like, if they're trying to shift it into more of a Lord of the Rings sort of a thing. And
I know that if there was a project, I don't know that it's what's happening with it now, but I know that for years there was a John Woo.
Yeah, that one's gone. That one has come and gone. For a while, the guy that directed that last G.I. Joe movie was going to do it, John Chu. Now he's not doing it. That's not happening. I mean, I would love to be proven wrong. I'd love for, you know, to come along and be like, oh, that's how you do a live action He-Man movie. The one thing I think this movie gets kind of backwards, or, well, not backwards, but that I just personally, I think this one commits to the sci-fi in a big bad way.
Yeah.
It doesn't have as much of the fantasy, which I think is kind of, you know, the sword and sorcery stuff. You want all that in a He-Man thing. Yeah, I don't know. It's a lot like Mario Brothers, where kind of thinking like it's a pretty thin premise.
You could throw all the money at this in the world, and the best it could get might be the Chronicles of Riddick.
I don't know. Well, I mean, but the fact about it, if that's true, first of all, I mean, it's weird. It's like, because you think about the opening narration of this movie, and how can something be that dense and that vacuous at the same time?
So weird.
And, but I don't think that's necessarily a disadvantage. I think that leaves a lot of room for, like they did with that first Ninja Turtles movie, to come in and say, like, well, here's our spin on it. We're going to keep it, because it's just iconography. They were fucking action figures. That's what the license you're buying. Mm. To take all that stuff and say, like, and then here's the mythology. We're really going to flesh out this mythology. Here's what we're going to try and hang all of this on. I mean, I do think it's possible to do something like that, I guess. I don't know. But, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I mean, I just think that's the trouble with He-Man, is that he's just not very driven on his own. There's nothing, he's always sort of just a pawn for someone else to control, which is, I guess, sort of interesting if the person really controlling him is really interesting and really has a driving force. But in this movie, I mean, both Skeletor and the Snow Queen of Sorceresses want to do that, and neither one of them is really doing it. He's pretty much just a free agent of a muscly guy wandering around, not really having any emotions or drive or purpose of his own.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of my biggest...
fix that with that character.
That is one of my biggest problems with the movie. And actually, I mean, as long as we're talking about final thoughts, this is kind of some of the stuff I wrote down. Is like, so I think that in addition to all the stuff we just mentioned about the difficulty of a He-Man or Masters of the Universe adaptation in the first place, this movie had too much working against it just right off the bat. I mean, you know, despite its good intentions, you know, because I don't believe these people didn't give a shit about the property. It's just like, here's what we've got. What's the best He-Man movie we can make, all things considered? Mm-hmm. But, you know, in spite of all, I can't get on board with this. And I, as a grown man, it doesn't bother me that it's not enough like the cartoon. That'd be, you know, that's ridiculous. Mm. It's that the direction they went instead results in a pretty boring story with occasional bright spots. And I said before, Julie and Kevin are not terrible characters, but it's too much screen time wasted on them. And the emotional center of the movie is them. It's not, you know, He-Man winds up being a supporting character in this story. And we don't see enough of the characters that we came to see. He-Man especially barely registers. Part of that is the script. Part of that is Dolph Lundgren being a little wooden. But again, yeah, so what I was saying earlier about that first Thor movie, too, it's like, and not that that was totally successful, but if you look at Thor in that movie as a character, being sent to Earth humbles him. He learns something from the experience. It's like, in order, you know, to be a worthy contender of his father's throne, this is the experience he needed to have. There was a journey there, that adventure, it meant something. You know, so if you're going to ditch Prince Adam, the alter ego, and all of that, I do think, you know, that might actually be okay. But then you need to give me a reason to invest in or care about this guy, beyond the fact that I'm just supposed to root for him, because that's...
the character.
He's the
Because you had this action figure, here it is. Like, that's... I need more than that. And I do think that's probably the film's biggest sin for me. The fact that... you know, his name being He-Man is his only defining character trait. He has no personality to speak of. I mean, I know some hard choices had to be made here, and, you know, they had so little to work with. But I think this movie, the end result is something that's going to disappoint anybody that has any affection or knowledge of He-Man as a property. And if you don't, you're going to feel like you wandered in into the second act of a story. Like, there's very little context for these characters or for the plot. And when you filter a larger-than-life mythology, you know, through a shoestring budget, what you get is something that doesn't feel like Masters of the Universe. It feels like cosplayers on their way to Comic-Con really and their bus broke down in California. I mean, it feels like that's what we're watching. So, yeah. So that was Masters of the Universe. Yeah. Do you want to do two truths, one lie?
Okay, if it's not too sad.
Mm-hmm. Too sad?
Yeah, the first one was someone died in 9/11.
We've had two or three others since then that were fine.
Yeah, but that one is rough.
So sad.
It's like, we're going to play a new game. This character died in 9/11.
This character? No, a real human being.
A real person.
The actor who played this character died in 9/11.
Okay, I promise. Alright, here we go. Two truths, one lie for Masters of the Universe. I'm gonna give you two truths and one lie. Okay, number one. A planned sequel involved Skeletor disguising himself as a human and becoming a Lex Luthor-esque tycoon, and He-Man returning to Earth and disguising himself as a professional quarterback.
Oh!
Number two. Langella accepted the role because one of his sons was a huge He-Man fan, but actually had a terrible experience making this. And so, in addition to that final fight scene, the guy that plays Blade is actually in the Skeletor suit for about 70% of the film. That you got Langella for the close-ups.
What?
But that he was, stand-in did a lot of the heavy lifting.
Ooh.
Number three, the abandoned sequel was eventually reworked and became the Van Damme film Cyborg. And when it was on TV, it would sometimes mistakenly be referred to as Masters of the Universe 2 Cyborg.
Yeah.
What?
Which one was the lie?
Okay, I think... Shoot. Okay, during the film, there's a moment when he's just like... when he's talking about power and having more power. And I mean, I'm sure that's a lot of what he says, when Skeletor says... But he's just talking about how he wants to have all the power. And I just kept thinking he should move to Earth and become a businessman. Because he would do really well in the 80s. He's basically Gordon Gekko. I'm going to say that is a truth.
Okay.
I'm going to say that the Cyborg one is a truth. And I'm going to say that the Langella one is a lie. But that sounds the most realistic. I'm going to say that one's a lie. Just going to go with it.
Yeah. I am going to choose the third one as the lie.
The Cyborg.
The one. Cyborg is a lie.
Okay.
He-Man is a quarterback. Clancella did this for his kids.
Carlos is correct.
Yeah,
Frank Langella, please. That one was a lie. He loved this movie. Loved this experience. At one point, some interview he gave, I don't know how many years later, saying this was one of his favorite roles. He had a great
amazing.
Time.
I mean,
had
a great time playing like it. He's having a great time.
As far as these others
go,
sad
to me the whole movie.
Yes, there was one of the versions of the sequel, which was going to be done on a much smaller budget with a different director and a different He-Man, like Dolph Lundgren. Dolph Lundgren did not enjoy this movie, and they offered him the sequel, and he said, "No, that's okay."
He must have been cold, right? He'd have been freezing the whole time.
Right. He did have those shoulder covers and a cape. But
helps some.
So they were going to replace a surfer. A professional surfer was signed to play He-Man in the sequel. That never happened. But yeah, there was a version where...
That would have been garbage.
Where, Skeletor turns and is a human and is industrialist guy. And presumably it was to save money. But we don't need to do the Skeletor makeup. And we also don't need Frank Langella back. I think if people thought this one was a little too far off from the cartoon.
Oh my God.
And then you get Lex Luthor Skeletor and quarterback football He-Man.
Surfing football quarterback.
Okay, and then this last one here. Yes, there was another... The common belief is that the sequel was turned into Cyborg. I don't think that's true. I think what happened is, so they were going to do this super low budget Masters of the Universe sequel. They had started building sets. They'd started putting costumes together. Mattel had approved certain things, like, oh yes, use these characters, da 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 da.
Mm-hmm.
Shit hits the fan. The movie does not go forward. They've got all these sets. They've got these costumes. What do we do? Well, we got this Van Damme guy who's kind of an up-and-coming star. We got, we can put him in something. Okay, quick, get a script together, and we can use all this shit that's left over. And that's what became Cyborg. It's not like they took the Masters of the Universe 2 script, made a few changes, and said, no, this is the movie. They just recycled a lot of the stuff they had built for the movie.
Was Van Damme going to be Hulk? Was he going to be He-Man?
No.
He-Man?
He-Man? No. So, yeah, that's that. Donna, what time is it?
It's time to play Who Would You Be and Who Would You F?
Let's guess for Donna, because this is going to be easy. You would be He-Man's codpiece.
Shoulder covers.
I can do both.
And you would F. You would F He-Man. Obviously.
Yeah. You would be.
Is that really your answer for who I would be? Yeah. He-Man's Schlongholder.
I think so.
Schlongholder is actually a character in the He-Man universe.
Yeah.
I, Schlongholder, will defeat you. You would be. Woman at Arms.
No, I would totally be Tila, Woman at Arms.
Okay.
She shoots guns and she's kind of in on the action. I feel like you see a lot of her body, even though she's totally covered.
Not an inch.
But there's just, she's got all those straps and.
Not a one bare inch.
Yeah, and the line about the Woman at Arms did sell me. Although I was contemplating, until he was vaporized right away, being the green monster guy.
Because
I thought it was a girl in there. It was something like a feminine quality about that one. I was like, oh, maybe I'll be that guy. And then as soon as I thought it, he was dead. So I was like, well, I don't want to be that guy anymore. But yeah.
Should have been Evelyn. Evil.
What about Uncle Moonshine? Or Moonrise? Oh my God.
Moonshine's a whole other thing.
You don't never want to know.
No.
Okay. Carlos?
Oh.
I'll say you want to be He-Man. This one was kind of tough. But I'm going to say you want to F Evil-Lyn because, Julie's cute, but she's not really sexy.
Mm.
Evil-Lyn, those are her real eyes. Those aren't contact lenses.
Yeah, those are some pretty crazy
eyes. She can turn into any woman I want her to be.
Yeah, she's got that morphing power, which is kind of scary.
You get to play this game with her every night.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Who would I ask?
That's a pretty good choice, yeah. I feel like I wanna go the same way, Evil Inn. And actually, I'm going to say you want to be Skeletor, because he's the best part, other than the muscles.
I would probably be Skeletor. I think he's the most interesting character by far.
Yeah.
Super interesting.
And he gets to broadcast himself across the world. Mm. And
he's got his own podcast.
Look at me.
Hey, please, do you look remember?
The last time he does the hologram, it's super blue, so he looks like Skeletor from the actual like cartoon.
I was going to say, the first time you brought up the hologram, he actually looks great in the hologram of the degraded quality. Yeah.
And I would F Tila.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tila.
Don't
no.
do that.
Have you been following her recently? No. Have you heard anything from her?
No.
She's a nut.
Even before that, she's
like,
that
before always. She was like trash. Now she's like nutty trash. Now she's kind of cray cray.
Sticking that is the STD Russian roulette is what that is. That's you just don't even know.
All right. Well, I'm not gonna look her up on the internet because I'm afraid of what I'll find. But I'll stop.
Your computer will get gonorrhea.
Anyone, don't look her up. You guys.
Okay. Who would I be? Who would I F?
I think he would F Julie. I think he's trying to throw me off the scent. And I think he's got a thing for Jared Leto.
Who doesn't? Yeah.
And would be Man at Arms. Because why not?
Uncle Moonrise.
you would have the sorceress. Come on. Easy.
Sorceress. In the first scene, she's young.
You have
and then she gets older because of her prison. I think that you would choose to F. Yeah, Evil Inn, I guess. And then you would be Kevin, because you're very musical.
Okay, so I was going to be Gwildor because he's got the key, he can go anywhere. See anything. I thought that's pretty cool. But then I was like, okay, I hate this. It's superficial. I'm sorry. But no, I'm going to be He-Man because my life is going to be exponentially easier if I look like He-Man. So
it's a gill cheeks? No. Yeah.
So I'm going to be He-Man. I'm going to snap Gwildor's spine like a saltine cracker, steal his key, and I'm going to time travel like a fucking boss. And I'm going to F Tila. And I'm going to keep a bucket list of all the points in history where I want a boner. And a bone her. Let me enunciate that correctly.
I really want a boner in the American Revolution.
Keep a list of all the places we're going to bone, Tila. Like King Tut's tomb, check. Velociraptor nest, check.
That's pretty good.
Where is this movie? You want to make $200 million? He-Man and Tila, fuck across time.
I guarantee that movie's been made.
All right. I think that's a great note to go out on.
Great time.
Ladies and gentlemen, am I living in a box? Am I living in a cardboard box?
Am I living in a cardboard box?
The melody changes slightly every time we do it, which is the best part. Okay, guys, that is it for us. Please rate and review us on iTunes. Subscribe on iTunes. Like our Facebook page to find out what we're looking at next and to share your own memories of these films. Let us know if you have other suggestions for other titles we should revisit, and we'll see you next time.